Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is Saturday, June 12th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and we are reviewing another episode of Friday Night Dynamite. Again, I think we're on week number two or second week in a row. I could be wrong about that, but yeah, we got a whole lot to talk about, I guess, you know. But overall, guys, pretty ho-hum. Honestly, I wasn't impressed for the most part. There was not a lot that was exciting. I was pretty bored. I don't know if it was I was just cranky or what was going on, but it wasn't for me. But anyways, let's get into the whole deal. Obviously, this time switch for AEW having to be on Friday nights lately because of the playoffs is definitely not helping their, I don't know if they're saving stuff or what the deal is, but this was definitely not an episode of Dynamite I was excited to jump on here and review with you guys, because there wasn't a lot to talk about, really. So let's just get right into it and start at the start of the show. Obviously, the start of the show opens with the Pinnacle arriving in a limousine. We will return back to that later. And then the show cuts to Matt Hardy in the ring with TH2, and he calls Christian Cage out. He says that Angelico is going to use his wisdom of experience to end Cage's career, and he'll never recover from this financially. Whatever, guys. I'm just going to fair warn you guys. I don't have the energy today. I don't even have the energy to pick on Matt Hardy today. And then we get our opening match of the night, which is Angelico versus Christian Cage. At the end of the day, you know, this match was a good match. This was fun to watch for the most part. It wasn't nothing super exciting, but it was a good functional wrestling match, obviously, with nice, you know, targeting certain body parts by Angelico, and essentially Christian Cage kind of out of nowhere, it felt like, you know, pulling out the not in a good way out of nowhere, but just out of nowhere gets the pinfall from the kill switch. Post match, Jack Evans tries to attack Christian, is, you know, to no avail, and then Matt Hardy hits the Twist of Fate, and thinking he's gonna go for, you know, either the Twist of Fate again, or I think the commentary said the Ice Pick. Jungle Boy comes out and makes the save. And, you know, I talked about this last week, guys. I like that. I like that dynamic by Jungle Boy and Christian Cage, mostly because I'm excited for when Christian turns heel and turns on Jungle Boy. Or maybe vice versa, but I assume it's going to be Christian. So, yeah, I like that Christian is friends with Jungle Boy now. I like that there is a dynamic behind the scenes that, you know, whether it's some headcanon that we're going to be able to kind of put in our own heads or make this own little world in our heads of, oh, so-and-so is friends with who, and so-and-so is friends with who. So everybody kind of has allies, you know, or maybe not everybody, but it's just nice to know that there's, like, in head canon, their own little world going on backstage besides just what we see on the screen. So always helps with believability. And, you know, as far as the match, guys, I really don't have a lot to say. I wasn't over excited by any of this. There were no spots that made me, you know, jump out of my seat. Just some good functional wrestling, you know, probably like one of the most, you know, technically sound matches of the night. So, and when we come back, Tony Schiavone is in the ring, talking about next week. And he says, Aaron Solo will team up with QT Marshall against Cody Rhodes and his partner, who is making his AEW debut, Arn Anderson's son, Brock Anderson. And then obviously Cody Rhodes comes out with Brock and Arn Anderson. And that he said, he makes some baseball references. And then says that, you know, he wouldn't mind some revenge considering he was pinned or beaten last week by Anthony Ogogo. And obviously QT comes out all peed because QT pinned Cody last week, not Anthony Ogogo. Then he, you know, asks Brock if he wants the whole Cody Rhodes treatment as well. And essentially he challenges Cody Rhodes to a South Beach strap match, and then Cody rips off his belt wanting to do it now, and then at the end of the whole thing, being distracted, QT, you know, takes a cheap shot on Arn with his own belt, and then Brock takes Marshall down and beats him until the referees, you know, get in the middle of them. So again, guys, like, more ho-hum stuff. I'm so ho-hum about this. I'm gonna say ho-hum more than anything else I've ever said in my life, apparently, on this show. Ho-hum. Let me think of another word. Someone get me a thesaurus, because maybe that'll help me. Do you think ho-hum is in the thesaurus? You know what? Side note, guys. Fun little detour on the review AEW Dynamite review show. We're going to look up if ho-hum is in the thesaurus, guys. All right, we got bland, characterless. I like that, characterless. Okay, ordinary, subdued. All right, unimaginative. All right, so now you guys know where I'm getting all my my terms for the night. Okay, so this feud, guys, between Cody Rhodes and Anthony Ogogo and just the factory and, the Nightmare family and the factory, it's flat, you know? It's flat for me. It's dry. And I'm just not into it. After the Anthony Ogogo lost and then the week after, like, it was, like, clear just to get some more heat back on Anthony Ogogo. Guys, if you have to do a match to get the heat back on someone, you probably shouldn't have them lose their heat in the first place. And that doesn't apply to all situations, but definitely a lot of them. So I'm just uninterested in this at this point, and throwing straps out for me doesn't... I don't know. I guess we'll have to see where the crowd, you know, how the crowd responds to the whole thing, but I'm not... You putting a stipulation on something is a very cheap way of just trying to, you know, trying to put, what is it? What's the expression? It's like trying to put a bow on a piece of crap. Let's go with that, right? You're just trying to make something that doesn't look good already look better. And, you know, the bow's not helping the crap much. So that's not the expression, but that's all I could come up with, guys. So, all right, moving on down. But yeah, to conclude on that, I don't care. I'm not excited, and I wish I was, but this is doing nothing for me anymore. And it really didn't. The minute they started bringing the whole U.S. Britain thing in it, is nobody gonna point out the fact that QT Marshall is not from England and is supporting this guy who's trashing the American country? That no one, whatever. Speaking of nothing. All right, Death Triangle, Pac, Penta, and Eddie Kingston versus the Young Bucks and Brandon Cutler in a six-man tag match. And you know, guys, I can't complain much about this match. There were some fun spots. It started off pretty slow. You know, most of this match, the Young Bucks are doing their Young Buck things, making funny Macho Man references, you know, joking about the hot tag, all the stuff that they do, mocking this and that. But at the end of the day, guys, Death Triangle and Eddie Kingston win by pinfall on Brandon Cutler. They pinned Brandon Cutler. And so, I when you put Brandon Cutler in this match, you kind of had a feeling, you know, who was going to win and how they were going to win. Obviously, Brandon Cutler was in there to take the fall. And he doesn't affect, obviously, the tag team records of the Young Bucks, but they still take a loss. So, it was nice to see, you know, Eddie Kingston and Pac do the dual suicide dives, tope suicida, whatever you want to call it. And there was also some fun spots in this match. I could watch Penta wrestle all the time, but man, do I miss Rey Fénix. And Pac as well. I love watching Pac too, but I just felt like, again, just like last week, guys, for a match that has the Young Bucks and Pac and Penta in it, and I'm not trying to speak ill of Eddie Kingston, because Eddie Kingston is great, but he's no Pac or Penta in the ring, right? But that's not his strength, in comparison at least. He's still great in the ring, but he's just not Pac and Penta. You guys get what I'm trying to say. I just expected more, and I didn't get it. And I don't know, again, if these guys aren't trying as much. I think these were pre-taped, so no live crowd, which definitely doesn't help. It still sounds good, you know, but you definitely know... I don't know. I remember at Double or Nothing, there sounded like there were some Agogo cheers, and there certainly weren't any Agogo cheers by the paid wrestlers in the stands. So I wasn't super into this. Again, functional and good, but a lot of it was kind of slow at some points, and the Young Bucks, I get the whole theatrical thing, guys, but I almost feel like it's bleeding into other parts of their wrestling, like the style of their wrestling. It feels like it's affecting some of the other moves they throw off. Like, I want them to be funny and goofy and jerks and theatrical and over the top. I hate them. They're doing a great job at that. But I don't want them to sacrifice their ability in the ring. And I don't mean, like, with cool moves or anything. I just mean, like, the little nuances of, like, when you actually throw a punch, making it look like you're actually throwing the punch, even if the guy is dodging out of the way, you know? Otherwise, it just looks stupid and choreographed and unbelievable. So... And not in a good way. Like, literally unbelievable. I cannot believe it, you know. And the whole point of this is for me to suspend my disbelief. So I actually texted Ashley Mann, you guys, and I said, am I just cranky, or is this six-man tag not all that great? I didn't get a text back, so, you know, I'm it'll come, right? Anyways, all right, post-match, guys, the Bucks try to, you know, hit a couple super kicks on the, and then the Good Brothers come out to join in the beatdown. But then, you know, guys, the Elite Assassin himself, Kazarian, comes out and makes the save. And then we have Eddie Kingston, Pac, Penta, and Kazarian standing tall against the Elite and the Good Brothers. And so, whatever. I enjoy the Kazarian stuff. I do. I like that they're keeping track with that. I want to see a little bit more, something different. They're doing the same thing every time, and I get that. In the next week or two, though, the next time, I want to see something a little bit more extreme. Maybe, like maybe we just cut to the back, and, like, Carl Anderson is, like, bleeding and knocked out, and, like, it's Kazarian. You know, you don't have proof of that. You don't actually have to see the beatdown, but I think that would look really cool. Just don't do catch-up like they did with the Young Bucks' dad in the Inner Circle. All right, then we get Kenny Omega and the Orange Cassidy video package, and apparently the one that he and Don Callis edited to last week to show the conspiracy theory against them or something. I don't know. Sami Zayn was in their head, apparently. And then when we come back from commercial after that, the Pinnacle enters the ring. Dax Harwood starts on the microphone. Basically says, you know, we lost Stadium Stampede, but gave Proud and Powerful a hell of a fight, and they compared each other, or they compared themselves to them or something, and then talked about having families or not. Sean Spears calls Sammy Guevara out as a glorified indie wrestler. I like that. I thought Sean Spears' promo, maybe MJF, but Sean Spears was probably the best at all of this. I didn't really, whatever FTR and Wardlow said didn't really hit for me, but Wardlow comes out and says, speaking of which, he says he brings out the best in Jake Hager and that Jake Hager is obsessed with him. And they all accept the matches that were, you know, dealt out to them by the Inner Circle last week or challenged to them, and, accept MJF. MJF comes, takes the microphone, says that he's tired, and, talks about how he idolized Chris Jericho. Nothing we haven't heard before, guys. And then just calls him a false god and declines the challenge for a match against him. Because really, guys, and you know what? MJF's logic? Not bad. One-on-one, he's already beaten Jericho. Why would he have to do it again? I get it. Good heel stuff. The truth is always a good heel stuff to good heel part to go with if you're able to execute it well enough. And then we have the Inner Circle appearing on the Tron, and they start destroying the limo that we saw earlier on the night. And then the one cool part of this was Jake Hager comes in with a forklift and just, like, demolishes it. But, man, they kind of were, like, very delicately beating the limo up. Did nobody else feel like that? I felt like they need to, you know, take a, go watch a, you know, a clip of JTG and, you know, rest in peace, Shad Gaspard, and show how to really destroy a limo, because this was bad in comparison, but it was cool to see Jake Hager do that stuff. I'm 14 in my brain, I guess, because I'm always down to see big things get destroyed by other big things. So, again, guys, similar to the Nightmare Factory and, or the Nightmare Family and the Factory feud, that's confusing me for some reason. Anyway, similar to that, you know, let me go back to my thesaurus, guys, on Ho-Hum. I'm just not, it's very blah. That's actually on the thesaurus, guys. B-L-A-H, blah. Again, it's dry and it's ordinary, and it's stale. It is very stale, this whole thing. They screwed up going Blood and Guts and then Stadium Stampede. I didn't need to see an attempted comedy match from these two guys. The Pinnacle have no heat left. They lost. And even the match they won, the Inner Circle no-sold it, so I don't need to go. You've heard me. If you want to hear me rant about all this and you haven't heard it before, go back and listen to any of the review shows I've done on this, because I probably have. And I don't want to give it any more time on the show because I'm so sick of talking about it, guys. I'm not into it. But I will say I'm finally looking forward to the individual matches. So at least there's that. We come back from commercial once again after the destroyed limo, and Darby Allin and Sting are in their weird little thing where Darby Allin, like, threw the bat out the window. No, I don't even think he did. Remember that weird promo where they just started smashing the window behind them? I think it was with the program against Team Taz. I think that was my low for the week one week. Wow, time means nothing nowadays. Okay, so Darby Allin and Sting are responding to Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. Darby Allin says that he's not going to replace Sting and he's just going to get in a handicap match. I don't know. This seems like, you know, let's just call it SDE, If you guys know what BDE means, I'm pretty sure you can use your brains and figure out what SDE might mean, because I'm not going to, I don't feel like editing this podcast. So yeah, from Darby Allin, like, big, big man can't handle that. Like, he can't get another teammate. I get this. It works for the story, but I don't know. I didn't. You're stupid. And not in, like, the cool Jeff Hardy, Darby Allin thrown down the stairs way, when you're like, oh, I'm just going to take these two guys on in a handicap match. Like, that's just stupid to me. It's not brave or anything. I don't have any respect for that. I just think you're stupid. So, yeah, he accepts and he's going to take a handicap match about these two. And then they go back and forth awkwardly, like, for a minute. Like, are you sure you want to go? Are you sure? No. Are you sure you want to do it? Yeah, I'm sure. Are you sure? I'm sure. Are you sure? I'm sure. I'm sure. Are you sure? And Sting's like, all right, I'll stay home. And then they fist bump and whatever. Am I excited for the match? No, not at all. But I will say that Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page have something. Not necessarily lightning in a bottle at all, but I am more interested in Scorpio Sky and Ethan Page than I was at the start. So they're doing their job right. And you guys have heard me on this podcast before. I think Ethan Page has got a lot of potential behind him. I think he could really be something in AEW if they allow him to, and if he works to. So... Evil Uno gets a video package talking about how much winning the TNT Championship would mean to him, obviously with the relationship with Brody Lee. Nice moment. And then we have the TNT Championship match, which was weird. This wasn't the main event, but I guess they wanted to end it on a nice note, so I guess that makes sense. Long story go away, guys. You know, this was a good match in between, or back and forth, at least towards the end. Most of the match, Miro kind of dominated, and then back and forth, and then obviously Miro wins by submission with the game over. I keep calling it the accolade. The game. Call me Jim Ross, guys. I know. Wins by submission with the game over to retain the AEW TNT Championship. And sad, you know, but Miro's so good at what he does. And again, this match, guys, just, it wasn't... They keep putting these bigger guys against Miro. Give me Dante Martin part two again. That was the most entertaining title defense yet. Yeah, way more entertaining than Lance Archer. More entertaining than this match. I want the little guys. Have Miro crush the little guys. Please. I get it. He's a big guy. He's not scared of anyone, but let's give him the little guys. He's a heel. He's allowed to be, you know, a little, you know, what Jade Cargill calls herself. He's allowed to be a little one of those. And not have to face these giant guys. He can face some younger, I mean, not younger, just smaller guys. Just give me Dante Martin part two. I don't care who it is. So give me Marco Stunt versus Miro. I'm so sick, guys. I'm sorry. Okay. We get a video package from Andrade. It looks great, obviously, Andrade, the face of the Latinos. And I'm excited for that sit-down interview next week because, you know, it sounds like I was not alone in feeling like the introduction of Andrade was weird and characterless and, yeah, blah, boring, weird, just not what he deserved. He deserved much more. He's a huge star. So, and then Omega and Callis are in the ring. Omega is belittling Jungle Boy, and then Don Callis obviously takes away the microphone from Tony Schiavone, as every heel does. Poor Tony Schiavone. And Don Callis tells Jungle Boy that he did a great job earning the title shot, but he's just like the band that sings his theme, a one-hit wonder. Essentially, Kenny Omega starts calling him an underwear model-esque body and tells him that he sees himself in him in a lot of respect, but, you know, he doesn't have the guts to get in the ring, which was weird. That was weird to me, but I get it. It's Kenny Omega. He can make anything sound good, but I don't know. They in AEW, they do a very good job of putting over the opponents, but also not belittling them, but like creating heat in the match and not making them lose their own heat or whatever. Like, it's a very good thing of just not, it's not like, I don't know, this 5-man match that's going on tomorrow night on NXT. You suck, but you suck more and you also suck and I suck the least. So I'm going to win. Like, they do a good job of putting whoever the opponent is over. But sometimes to me, and in this case, it was too much of an extent. I would have loved to kind of hear Kenny Omega be Kenny Omega and say a little bit more than that he doesn't have the guts to get in the ring. Like, or Callis said that. One of them said it. Both of them. I'm talking about Kenny Omega and Don Callis. So, obviously, Jungle Boy comes in the ring. He, you know, says that he just stands there, listens to Kenny Omega blab on for a little while longer. And then Jungle Boy says that he talks too much. Kenny Omega goes for a cheap shot. Jungle Boy dodges. They go back and forth for a little while, and then Jungle Boy nearly has him in the snare trap when the Young Bucks come and make the save. And then we cut to, before I go on, sorry, I'm just moving on down the line. I'm excited for this match. We all know what's going to happen. Though, I will say, if they put the title on Jungle Boy, I won't be mad. It's way too early, but I think AEW could do for a shock title change in the next year or two. I don't know who, we all kind of see the writing on the wall of Hangman Page, at least we hope so, and I have a small fear that because we see it so well that, you know, it might not actually happen because I'm just cynical like that and I can't have nice things. But, and predictable is not always bad, but I don't know, guys. I could use for a good shock victory. I'm not saying it has to be this one, but just, like, continue to maintain the belief that anything can happen in this company. And I think they need to do that a little bit more. So, and then we get a promo from Jade Cargill and Mark Sterling that I don't care about. And then we get a promo from Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. And Sky tells Darby that they gave him an opportunity, but just like the sensitive child he is, exactly, this is exactly how I felt. He couldn't even do that. And, you know, he's done a lot of dumb things, but this will be the dumbest thing he's ever done. And Ethan Page says that Darby already knows the consequences of stepping in the ring with them, but has he really considered the mental consequences of getting pinned by them? I don't know exactly what he means by that, but I might be missing something. You lose, okay. I'm. You know what I have to do, guys? I have to go back and watch these Ethan Page, Darby Allin matches from, I forget what the company is called, and I'm a really bad podcaster right now because I can't remember. It starts with an E, doesn't it? Whatever. Indie program. I think it's the one that even WWE might have purchased. I don't know. Not Evolution. I'm going to spend the entire podcast racking my brain around this. And also, I'm going to be in the middle of reviewing something else, and it's just going to come to my brain. So, same thing as I said before. I think this was one of the best promos that Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky cut, though. And I like their little, you know, thing. Bit by bit, they're going to cut them down and raise themselves as the man of the year, or the men of the year are here, or something like that. I like their little catchphrase. It was cute. So, Chandler, we get Chandler Hopkins versus Lance Archer, the most pointless part of the entire show and probably the most pointless part of my week. Just a quick squash. Again, clear. Let's get Lance Archer his heat back. Lance Archer has no credibility anymore, guys. And so you shouldn't have booked him against Miro and had him do all this weird stuff with Darby Allin for so long. Like, that didn't pay off for anything, by the way. Maybe there's a plan down the line, but I doubt it. Maybe Lance Archer comes out and saves Darby Allin next week. But Lance Archer would have been a great teammate to pick for Darby Allin next week if he was smart. But we have to have stupid baby faces who need to go into a handicap match by themselves. So, I don't know. Evolve, guys. That's what it was called. It's Evolve, right? Their matches were in Evolve. Okay. See, I told you. That's exactly what was going to happen. All right. So, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't super into this. Of course I wasn't, because who was? Poor Chandler Hopkins. And Lance Archer doesn't even celebrate, and he walks off. And thank God, because this was stupid. All right, then we get a wingman promo backstage with Ryan Nemeth and, you know, calling out Orange Cassidy and telling him that if they don't let him rearrange his wardrobe, they're going to rearrange his face. Honestly, more entertaining than the Lance Archer match. So, all right, third hour, guys. Layla Hirsch versus Nyla Rose, because you know what third hour means. Third hour means, third half of the hour. You get what I'm saying. The women's division slot, right? And, you know, long story go away, Nyla Rose wins by pinfall with an avalanche beast bomb. What do you know? The women's match was probably the best match on this show as well, if not maybe the last match. But this was definitely good. Layla Hirsch was great. But here's my problem with this, guys. And I could talk about the great wrestling in this match, but that's really not the point. And if any of you have heard me on any podcast before, I am about the storytelling and the wrestling comes second. In a Britt Baker, Nyla Rose feud, Britt Baker is a heel, correct? They want to make her a heel. They're keeping her a heel. If they wanted to turn her babyface, which would be an awful idea, in my opinion, they probably would have done it at Double or Nothing. And then they take Nyla Rose, who's with the heel manager of Vicky Guerrero, and a heel, and they have that be the first program. Like, what is... How... there's got to be a better plan than this, because I don't think they're this stupid. Or maybe they just really don't care about the women's division as much as I think they don't care about the women's division. Why would you put a heel against a wrestler who you're struggling to have stay heel because she's so likable? I don't want any tweener crap, guys. I don't like the tweener crap. Very rarely does it work. I think I am more lenient on it than a lot of other wrestling review podcasters or whatever out there. So, you know, at the end of the day, obviously Nyla Rose wins. But this wasn't even a squash, so I was more impressed with Layla Hirsch than I was Nyla Rose at the end of this match, guys. That's it. All right, so then we move on to Tony Schiavone interviewing Britt Baker, another probably greatest part of the show. She says that she was furious with Nyla Rose for breaking up her celebration. And then she realized that Nyla looked good flipping burgers, so maybe she should look into a new line of work doing that. Aha. And then she says that Layla, that Nyla Rose is a jerk for making short jokes about Layla, and says that she makes the title, and the title doesn't make her, and for Nyla's sake, Nyla needs the title. And the one thing I'll say about this whole promo, I mean, obviously it's Britt Baker, so it's great, right? But the one thing I'll say about that promo is the last line was really good. She does make that title doesn't make her. And as much as I love Hikaru Shida and as great of a wrestler as she was, you know, AEW kind of did her dirty with the lack of storytelling in most of her feuds. So it's not just Hikaru Shida's fault, obviously, guys. In fact, it probably falls more on creative. But Britt Baker is pushing the issue with this women's division because she's so talented and she maximizes her minutes so well that she makes that title. That title does not make her. Think about how much more that title is elevated around her waist than it was around Hikaru Shida. And arguably, Hikaru Shida is a better wrestler. It's not about the wrestling always, guys, on a pro wrestling show. The wrestling is the vehicle for the story being told. And Britt Baker is an amazing promo, storyteller, all that stuff. So I like that line. We get the matches announced for next week, and then we go to break, obviously. And when we come back, we get the main event, which I think I said this 3 times already, but probably this was my favorite match of the night. We get Hangman Adam Page and number 10 Preston Vance versus Team Taz's Brian Cage and Will Hobbs. And this was a great, entertaining, fun match to watch, and a vehicle for a story. What do you know? Those two go together really well. You know, watching Adam Page wrestle anytime is awesome. So magnetic. It's such amazing babyface energy. And I know I'm stretching here, guys, but that little horse in the beginning of his music and everything, I get that, like, excitement feeling every time it happens. So they're doing such a good job with him. And yeah, guys, so the end of this match was Adam Page and Preston Vance win by pinfall with the buckshot lariat and the 1-2-3. And I really enjoyed this. You know, it was fun to see post-match Adam Page celebrating with the Dark Order. You know, I forget who on commentary it was. I think it was Tony Schiavone. No, Excalibur, maybe, about, you know, they all get a nice beer and for -1, a nice bottle or cup of water or something like that. This was cute, and it was a nice way to end, and I understand why they put this as the main event now when I look back, obviously. And there were some really good spots in this match, and, you know, my favorite thing in this whole thing, what do you know, guys, was the storytelling in the match. Obviously, it was similar, if not the same thing, and akin to what happened at Double or Nothing, but that's the point. You know, obviously this time it escalated a little bit, and this is how you slowly burn stuff. Like, this is how you have a slow burn of a faction breaking up. And, you know, Ricky Starks with the slap to Brian Cage during the match after he wouldn't hit him with the title belt, and then Brian Cage walking off on Powerhouse Hobbs. You know, I'm not feeling like, get on with it, Team Taz. I'm, like, just excited for the next, you know, excited for the next whatever. I'm excited for whatever is next for Team Taz, you know, and the breakup of Brian Cage, turning babyface, obviously, eventually. Loving all of the stuff that Ricky Starks is still able to add to this, still with, like, an injured neck. Just good stuff all around. Great storytelling, and probably the only storytelling I enjoyed the entire show. So, overall, guys, hated this Dynamite, pretty much. Just bored of these Friday night shows. I think they're really, I really hope they're holding back, and this is not, I assume that's what's going on, obviously. And the ratings clearly show that, you know, not, it's obviously being the time switch doesn't help it, but I don't know, guys. This Saturday night show is going to have to be really good. Obviously, they have one more Friday, I think, and then we have Saturday night, if I'm correct. But then again, guys, I never know what I'm talking about with dates, so who knows? Don't trust me. Even next week's show didn't look that exciting to me, guys. A lot of the matches look pretty similar, if not the same. I'm not interested in a lot of the feuds going on because the story beats are boring or confusing or muddled or long drawn out. I think there's a little tweaks that you can do in a lot of stuff that would make it a lot better, and I'm hoping that AEW realizes that soon. So, sorry guys, kind of for a ho-hum review show this week, but I'm working a lot coming up now, but I will still manage, I'm sure, to pump out these two shows, highs and lows in this review show, and then obviously we'll be back for next Friday night, Saturday morning, to review next week's Dynamite, as well as hopefully dropping tonight or tomorrow morning the highs and lows of the week. So bunch of exciting stuff going on here, guys, on the WWE podcast. If you're not subscribed on Patreon, $1 a month, totally ad-free, extra shows. I'm thinking I have a bunch of ideas in my head of being able to do another little show to drop on there for Patreon, exclusively for Patreon only. Hopefully I have the time, and I will do my best to absolutely make that time, because I love doing this and I love being able to talk to you guys. So thank you again for choosing this show and listening. And hopefully we have more to talk about next week on Dynamite, but it doesn't look like it for now. So I'm just depressed with like the state of the women's division in Dynamite right now. You just put the best woman as your championship and your first contender is another heel. I hope I get to get on the show, guys, and tell you that I was wrong about a lot of the stuff that I've just kind of been about, you know, today. So, all right, guys, with that being said, thank you again for listening, and I will talk to you next time.